Welcome to Soul Sciences, where inner exploration meets outer experiences. I'm your host, Charlene, inviting you to listen in, subscribe, and learn more about the place, the edge where inner soul meets outer science. Thanks for joining this episode of Soul Sciences. Hi, everyone. I'm here with Angela B. Chrysler, and she is just explaining so much about history, as well as the history that has gone into her own work, The Tales of the Druid. Angela, what was the process like for you to be writing so intensely? You've written three books. We mentioned the memoir, Broken, very powerful book, and then the length of your first book, as well as the length of your second book, even though they were both originally one book. What was it like? What's it been like? What is your process?
Well, it took me 7 years to write Tales of the Druid. Dolor and Shadow and Fire and Lies. When I started writing back in 2007, it was actually, it evolved out of a tantrum. I was so angry with this book that I had read. I knew I wanted to be an artist, an author. I didn't know what genre to write, so I was researching all of them, and I got to the romance genre, and I read through probably 40 romance novels, and I got to this one that just made me so angry that I threw it down and declared that I would do something better, and I would make a heroine, a true heroine, that reflected the time period and what I wanted, and that is literally how Colin came to be. From there, so I've got this Colin. She's going to be an elf. What do I know about elves? Well, I know Tolkien. What else do I know about elves? I know D&D, Dungeons and Dragons. So I actually started with Dungeons and Dragons. I remember the 1.0 kit that I had when I was a child. And there was dwarves, and I went, well, that's Norse myth. That's fantasy. So that led me to Norse myth. I started there on Wikipedia and started researching. So I guess the first part of this would be the research. And as I researched, this plot started to form, and it really came together. The more I researched, the more just pieces came together. And I started researching Germany and its influence on the Viking era. I researched the trade routes and that influence, how the Roman Empire and Christianity influenced the Scandinavian culture. And then I got into the Celtics. There's you cannot touch Norway and Scandinavia, Norse mythology, without getting into the Ireland and Scotland's history and their influence there. And in point of fact, this was one of my favorite things that I uncovered, was apparently the High Kings of Ireland was actually the Viking prince of Eric Bloodaxe. I'm sorry, of Ragnar Lodbrok, who is actually featured in the Vikings history. His son would go on to be Ivan the Terrible, and Ivan the Terrible established the throne, the High Kings of Ireland. He was the father of it all. So it really brought this together. And as I researched, I had this massive information coming to me. I pulled out whiteboards and research papers, and I started drawing this massive web between, okay, so this is the history. And these people with their solid history had all these events and kings and monarchs and wars going on. And while I drew all that out, this was their religion, was the Norse and the Celtic myths. So then I had this storyline going on with the mythology, and elves are very much a part of that mythology. So through that, I then said, well, if elves are real in this world, the mythology is going to be real. So I brought to life the Celtic myth, the Norse myth. They're real characters in the book. You see Loki in the book. He's Lop, which is his old Norse name. You see Odin. You see the Valkyrie. And you see the elves, you see them correspond with the men of the period and the history that's happening. And once I had all that together, then, of course, I started writing. The first draft was terrible. I still have it. It's really, really bad. So I rewrote it 7 times. And I was also learning how to write when I was writing Dolor and Shadow and Fire and Lies. and I kept rewriting it. I would get halfway. It was always chapter 30. I would get to chapter 30 and I would go, oh, I just learned something new about grammar or about the story or about storytelling. And I would, from 30 and on, apply that method. And then I would finish the book and go, okay, I have to go back now and apply that to chapters 1 through 30. And I did that. But sure enough, as soon as I got to chapter 30 again, I went, oh, I have another epiphany. This is how you do this grammatically. So from 30 on, I did it again. And by the time I went back and redid another cycle, chapter 30 again, I had another epiphany. 7 times I did this. And I'm sorry, 5 times I did this over 7 years. And I kept doing this until I finally got through the whole book without changing anything, without any new acknowledgments or epiphanies or changes. When I could finally sit down and read the whole book without going, okay, this is what I want different. I can now sit down and read Dolor and Shadow and Fire Lies and go, yep, this is what I want. There's nothing to be changed. Then I, of course, started submitting it to agents. At this point, the book was 270,000 words long, and it was called Lore Lenolin's Lies. People loved it. The agents were asking for it. And at the end, they all came back saying, I don't know how to market this, and it's too big. So I cut it in half into Dolor and Shadow, and then, of course, Fire and Lies. And so for me, I'm actually publishing the second half of my first book. That's really what it feels like to me. And then I'm up at 4 a.m. I'm writing, and I'm applying research outlines. And I'm doing that actually right now with book 3, Winter and Ash, and the rest of the series. So I can see exactly where I'm taking what points and how it all plays into itself.
So how many books will there be in the series total? Do you know?
At this point, either 6 or 8. I think really 7, but I feel like that's just copying too much of Harry Potter, and I don't want to do that. But I really, honestly, I think it will be 7 books, but I really don't. I need to really establish whether or not that's going to be, but definitely 6 books. I have 3, I have 4 more to write at least. And then of course there's, I don't want it to be spread too thin. I don't want it to be crammed in too much into a short period of time. So I do need to make sure that the story is told within a certain pacing. So right now I'm going to say 6 total with 4 books left.
That is a highly ambitious, and I just have to be so complimentary to you about having that kind of ambition. I'm the kind of writer who says, well, I'll get through this book and then maybe I'll start a second book or a third one while I'm writing that one, but they're all different. Chaotic, you know, they're splashing in every direction. Very different approaches I think all writers have, and it's always wonderful to find out from another writer. Now, what do you find the easiest part of the writing?
Oh, the easiest part. Oh my goodness. The part where I am now with Fire and Lies, where my editor has it, waiting for it to come back for its final edition. I don't have to do anything now. I got 2 weeks solid where I can just like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm marketing, you know, I'm putting together the release party on July 1st, and I'm setting up pre-orders, and I'm building the book trailer. This part's good.
This is the fun stuff, yeah. Now, Angela, you mentioned that you did get a positive response from agents and publishers. Why did you decide to do self-publishing?
I didn't want to wait. It was really just impatient. I had spoken, it was really a hard, hard decision to decide indie over traditional. An agent is just an agent. Just because an agent signs on does not mean you have a deal. It means they're going to try and get you a deal. And I had already been looking for 6 months, and I was getting phenomenal feedback. I have invitations from agents to submit further material down the road. But at the end of the day, I had already spent 6 months just querying agents. I was probably going to be looking at another 6 months of them querying publishing houses. And at the end of the day, when I looked at royalties, because they get 70 to 90% of royalties, an author gets 10 cents on the dollar sometimes, and they supply the editor, they supply the book cover. And when I start looking at pricing from book covers and editors on my end, I'm like, well, I can pay a, you know, less than $500 upfront cost now and have those and not have to, first of all, I won't have to wait a year to find a contract. I won't have to wait another 3 to 6 months while they build my book. And I get to keep a good chunk of my own royalties. That was a huge, huge part of my decision. As far as marketing, when I started off, this is how Brain to Book started. I interviewed a collection of authors, including a U.S. Times best-selling author, and she had been traditionally published. So I was able to sit down with a successful traditionally published author and say, what is it like on your end? And then I sat down with some very successful and very unsuccessful indie authors and say, what is it like on your end? And they all said the same thing. You have to do your own marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, if you're doing your own marketing,
mm-hmm.
and I'm doing my, you know, I'm paying $500 up front for my cover and my editor, why do I need to, why am I going through a traditional author again or traditional publishing house?
I think that's a really, really powerful question. And I'll just add in a little bit that I've been learning recently about one of the things that the publishing houses do, the trad publishing mm-hmm. houses do, is they cover distribution. So that means they go to Ingram Sparks for
oh,
you.
Yes.
They go to Amazon for you. They go to all the different outlets.
I'm going to point out, you are saying for you.
Yes.
You can do this on your own. You
can yes.
get into Ingram Sparks.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
In the Barnes & Noble.
Absolutely. And I think they're called fulfillment houses is the
yes.
other way to go. And
right.
you can do all of your own distribution, and no mm-hmm. question. And it is a little pricey up front. However, and here in Canada, it's usually your first-time writer is going to make between 7 to 8%. So that's
mm-hmm.
7 to 8 cents on the dollar. And it seems to me, I'm very much in favor of self-publishing in the great world that we're in right now, because it seems to me that unless you really want to hire and keep everybody else employed, which is a great thing to do.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, I have a friend who's very, very successful as an historic fiction writer, very successful internationally. And
mm-hmm.
and I've said very directly to this person, you're actually employing and keeping employed not only all the people in your publishing house, but all the other writers who are not making the kind of money that you're making and don't have the success that you have.
That needs to be restated. That needs to be like, and that's it right there. One author is keeping the traditional publishing houses running. They are paying out of pocket out of royalties, the staffing, the, yeah, absolutely.
Because she gets, I'm sure this person gets quite a chunk up front. And then the books do sell, and that's great. One of the things that always bothered me a little bit about that process, though, is the remaindered books. I always feel very sad to think that any of my books or people I know who write books would find their books straggling in these, first in the discounted section, which is not a problem to me, but then being thrown into a warehouse somewhere
where there's all these... I'm gonna reveal a little something there. I worked in a bookstore. I know what happens to those books. Once a month, this is why I left. Once a month, we had clean out where we would take the books that didn't sell, walk to the back of the dumpster, rip them in half, and throw them in the garbage.
That breaks my heart. That's like, those are trees.
I did it a whopping once and said, I can't do this.
Good for you.
You donate them. You give them to libraries. You don't destroy books. We are not Nazis. You don't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
And
the trees that are involved, all of it, the whole ecology of it is from my point of view.
You send them to a country that requires them, that need, don't destroy books. And I talked to them about that. I said, well, can't you donate them? No, because it's business, it's a profit. Now you're looking at tax write-off. Hello? I don't.
There's always a way to do it. It's a question of people having the will to do that. And I, for that reason, I do like the PODs. I like the print on demand, where if you want
mm-hmm.
a book, you ask for it and you get it. And then there's no, nice and tidy. What you do with that book later is, again, hopefully people would recycle books and send them back to other people. And, I know that Amazon has its dark side, but one of the dark side of Amazon. But what I like about Amazon too is that you can resell your books even for a penny each.
Okay.
But you can resell them to somebody who wants those books.
It's funny because Broken is available on Amazon for, I believe it's $12. I think it's $12. And I saw some sellers who bought Broken and are reselling it for $180.
Oh, my goodness.
It feels so good. I'm like, well, I'm glad they think my book is worth that much.
I wonder if they get any takers.
It's okay. It's paper.
Yeah.
The ebook is $2.99.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why they posted it for that much. I'm like, okay. All right.
Well, Angela, tell us now, you mentioned that you're doing a release party in a few days here is coming up, and that's July 1st. And
yes, that is July 1st.
Where is the release party taking place?
On Goodreads. Woohoo!
Yay!
No, I'm really excited for this. I took the Brain to Book Cyber Convention format. Huge topic. We are not getting into it now. Google Brain to Books or go to braintobooks.com. That is plural on the book, not the brain. And it's all there. I cannot, it's too big to go into here. It requires an hour of our time to explain. Charlene will tell you. She was there. So we had, I took that format and applying it to my release party on Goodreads. It's actually 2 days, July 1st and 2nd, and authors are coming in. It's fantasy and science fiction only for the release party. So every hour on the hour, we have a new author who will be presenting their book, fantasy and or sci-fi, and it will be on display. They'll be talking about it and sharing it with you. There will be giveaways, prizes, games, etc. And I believe right now I also have a Fire and Lies giveaway happening, so that's on Goodreads. And also I have, on July 2nd, we continue that takeover. And there are a couple slots available for open hours. If you just got the memo and you want to run in and immediately post whatever you want, you didn't get on the schedule, that's open for, there's 2 hours that are open for authors who want to come in. On the flip side of all this, we're also doing the Brain to Books Book Blast on July 1st, which we are also doing a takeover that's open to all other genres as well, including sci-fi fantasy, if you didn't reserve a slot over there.
That sounds like a very busy schedule, but you know what? I just know that you're going to pull it together because you do so much for so many, and I want to thank you, and thank you for being a guest on our show today. Thank you so much for all your information and for the fun we've had.
Thank you so much.
Be well, Angela. That's it. That's all for today. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon, and in the meantime, remember, be kind to each other. For more Soul Sciences, go to www.soulsciences.net or email me at charlenej@rogers.com. Many thanks to Kevin MacLeod for that great intro and extra music called Carefree. Bye for now.